yesterday, because I had a certain sensitivity to the difficulty of people not allowed to come to Mass and not allowed to receive Holy Communion, I decided not to focus only on the bread of life, but instead I focused on the first reading, or I tried to take a lesson from the first reading, the story of Elijah and his two-part meal. The first time he ate, he lay back down again. The second time he ate, he was able to walk for 40 days and 40 nights. So I took that as an instruction on natural food and supernatural food. When we eat natural food, well, we lie down again. When we eat supernatural food, we can progress on our journey to God. Well, this is in the back of my mind as I reflect on this passage about taxes. Naturally, there's the most mundane, the most natural requirement that we all have to pay taxes. But then there's also a supernatural payment which Jesus has made for the salvation of the world. So there's this natural, and then there's this supernatural issue of payment or tax. So let's start with the lowest level, the mundane, the level of taxes. Nothing more ordinary than that. The question of taxes is built on the issue of authority. Who has authority to impose or mandate the payment? We take it for granted that governments have this authority. That's how they get their money. They impose a tax, and that tax makes it possible for the government to fulfill its function. This whole question of authority is raging nowadays during the pandemic because people are asking, what is the government's authority over us in relation to what we usually consider our personal freedoms? Can the government tell us not to leave our homes? Can the government tell us we have to wear a mask? In countries where the government has a lot of authority and personal freedoms are not considered very highly, think of China, for example. Well, no one questions whether the government can tell you what to do because the government's always telling the people what to do. In a country like the United States, where individualism and individual freedoms are valued very highly, this question comes up, how can the government tell us what to do? Does the government have the right to tell us to wear a mask or not? So this controversy over mask mandates keeps coming up. Here in the Philippines, we're somewhere between those two extremes. It's not extremely, the government doesn't have the extreme control like in a communist country. And yet the idea of individual freedoms is not emphasized as much as in the States. And yet this question comes up. Well, everybody's willing to wear a mask nowadays because everyone's afraid of the virus. But there are people questioning, well, can you tell us that we can't go buy a pizza? Well, and the government's saying, well, you can buy a pizza, but you can't eat it in the place where you buy it. And you can't eat it with someone who's within 6 feet of you. You can eat it in the street, but you can't eat it together with somebody else. These are the questions. Okay, now I'm drifting a little bit about this question of who has authority over us. It comes up because of the question of taxes. Who is required to pay taxes? Jesus faced this question in another setting when they asked him about whether to pay the tax to the Romans or not. That was a question about state authority. And Jesus very brilliantly said, well, you give to Caesar what belongs to Caesar, give to God what belongs to God. In fact, Jesus in his whole ministry is generally very supportive of submission to authority, because his whole mission, his own personal mission, is in submission to the authority of the Father. Jesus doesn't have this illusion that freedom comes from being able to rebel, or freedom comes from not having to submit. That is, he's not under that illusion. He knows that genuine freedom comes from submission to the truth. The truth will set you free. So he doesn't think that we have to constantly stand up for our freedom. The real freedom comes from the truth, comes from God. Anyway, today's question is a little bit different, because it's not a question of submission to civil authority, but submission to religious authority. This is the question of the temple tax. The temple tax was not imposed by the Romans. It was imposed by the Jews for the upkeep of the temple. So to put it in modern terms, we're not talking about whether the government tells us to wear a mask or not. We're reflecting on whether the church has the right to require us to wear a mask in the church, or the church has the authority to impose rules on how we are to worship. I've noticed this again in the ECQ. People are critical of the church for submitting to the government safety protocols. I don't know why people have set these things up as if you have one, you don't have the other. There can be a certain collaboration. There can be a certain agreement about what's good for everyone. I noticed the bishop here, he didn't make the statement that now we will have to suspend the public celebration of Mass because the government said so. He said, we're going to suspend the public celebration of Mass for the good of the people. He's a shepherd watching over his flock, and he's saying, it's dangerous now. So he agrees with the government, but he didn't just submit blindly to the government. He used his own authority as a shepherd to take care of his flock. Okay, so here this one, we're talking about the temple tax. It's a little hard to get a feel for how much this really was. It was a half shekel, but how much is a shekel? So let's say it was 300 pesos. I'm trying to get this. It was enough that you don't just dismiss it as nothing, but it wasn't so much that it was burdensome if you have to pay 300 pesos once a year. That's not impossible. Maybe foreigners might think of the head tax, what's colloquially known as the head tax. The government imposes on foreigners an annual fee. It's 310 pesos. It's not that much, more of a inconvenience than a burden. But it's also a reminder to every foreigner, you're not a citizen. And if you're going to stay here, you have to submit to the authority of the government. So you pay the head tax every year. Okay, Peter is asked the question, does your teacher pay the temple tax? And Peter says, well, of course he does. He doesn't even think of it. Because everybody pays it. It's something like asking, well, do you eat? Well, of course, everybody eats. When Elijah yesterday was given the hearth cake and the jug of water, and the angel said, get up and eat, he got up and ate. That's what you do. When you have food, you eat. That's the mundane level. But Jesus sees an opportunity here to give a teaching about something transcendent, not merely what everybody does and what everybody pays and what everybody eats, but what about what God does and what God offers as food, what God pays. So he asks Simon Peter, who pays, or what do kings impose on their own subjects, and what do they impose on foreigners. It's a little bit strange because kings typically raise taxes from their own subjects. It makes it sound like kings aren't going to make their subjects pay tax. Well, of course they do. But if you understand the original language, it says not subjects, but sons. Do kings of the earth take tolls or census tax from their sons or from foreigners? Well, nobody makes his own children pay taxes to live in his own house. Here there's a difference, again, a cultural difference. The Americans don't think anything of making their adult children pay rent in their own houses. That is unthinkable in the Philippines, to make your own children pay rent to your own, to their own parents in their own house. That's unthinkable. Well, actually, the Filipinos are closer to the point Jesus is making. You don't make your own children pay. You take care of your own children. But let's get to the transcendent level here. Jesus is indicating that he is going to pay. He's not going to simply pay a temple tax. He's going to pay for everybody. And the way he does this is with this fantastic miracle of the coin in the mouth of the fish. This is a very strange miracle. Jesus didn't usually do what looks like a magic trick. He didn't usually do something fantastic or marvelous just for its own sake. But here he tells Peter, the first fish, open its mouth, you'll find enough to pay the tax for you and for me. As if to say, I've got everything worked out, every detail. I have it all orchestrated for the good of everyone. Now, this detail at the end of the gospel about the coin in the mouth of the fish is connected to the beginning of the gospel, where Jesus says, the Son of Man is to be handed over to men, and they will kill him, and he will be raised on the third day. And they were overwhelmed with grief. What does the coin in the mouth of a fish have to do with the passion, death, and resurrection? Everything. Jesus does not simply pay money to save us. He sacrifices himself, not simply to save himself and Peter, but to save the whole world. They're overwhelmed with grief because they don't understand. This is the good news. This is not bad news. This is the best news, that Jesus pays the tax for us. He pays the price of our salvation. He pays the demand of justice to save those who are guilty, the innocent paying for the guilty. That's the great news of our salvation. So you say, well, what does that have to do with taxes? Well, taxes are nothing by comparison to salvation. But Jesus, by paying the temple tax, reveals he's the one who pays the price for us all, for our eternal life. We have to get this. I mean, we don't have to be taught to pay taxes because we have to pay taxes. But we do have to be taught that Jesus pays the price for us so that we won't be complaining when we have suffering in our life. So we won't think that injustice, terrible injustice, is being done to us all the time, or that we have to suffer so much from COVID-19. I think we can learn this lesson from today's saint, Saint Edith Stein, Teresa Benedicta of the Cross. She got this instruction about the payment. She discovered, she was a Jew, then she became an atheist, Then she discovered the good news. Jesus pays the price for all of us, and he invites us to be part of this mystery of redemption. She understood this, so she converted to Catholicism and finally became a Carmelite nun, offering her whole life for the salvation of the world, joining with the mystery of the cross. That's why she's Benedicta of the Cross, Blessed of the Cross. And she offered herself, and God took this offering. He said, okay, Edith, you want to make an offering of yourself? I welcome this gift of love. I welcome this witness to the power of paying the price for the good of others. So she offered herself to God, and because she lived in the terrible era of the Nazis, she offered herself for her people, the Jewish people. She, well, talk about transcendent. The worst thing going on at the time was the Nazis were wiping out all the Jews. The best thing going on at the time was that God was not defeated by the evil of the Nazis. He even used this horror to reveal the power of the redemption. And Edith Stein jumps right into the middle of it. She jumps into the middle of it. She offers herself as a sacrificial gift. She's burned up in the ovens in Auschwitz. Okay, see how far we got from paying taxes. Taxes are nothing, but the price of our salvation and the opportunity to join our little sufferings or big sufferings with the sacrifice of Jesus on the cross, this is everything. So, God has called us through the gospel to possess the glory of our Lord Jesus Christ. We possess this glory by joining ourselves with the sacrificial, redemptive offering of Jesus Christ.